Good evening, everyone. Is this thing on? No. Yeah. I want to call this meeting to order. It's 5:30. It is meeting number 2 in our six presentation process. And Joe, do you have anything you need to lead off with?
Nothing that I can think of right now.
Okay. How about welcome, Rick. I'm happy you're here. And up first is the Weights and Measures with Don Ellis. How come it's so dark back there? Isn't it? No, back there.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
No.
Hello, everyone. Leaving me in the dark again, huh?
Yeah, I don't mind. Why is it? Are you controlling the lights up there, please? Go ahead. You're looking at a computer. We're good.
Okay. My budget this year is virtually identical as last year, except for a little bit less in the fringes. There's the numbers on it. It's a reduction of about $1,252. There hasn't been any significant changes in businesses this year. My numbers are so far are pretty much consistent over the past 2 or 3 years. So everything's staying pretty well status quo. No new employees. Just me still. I'm still full-time. And there's no OTRs for this year. So, like I said, there's no significant changes at all, or even minor changes.
Well, are you open for questions, Don?
Yep.
Anyone want to ask Don a question? Martha, and then Mike.
How are we going to use the other 8 minutes for your presentation?
No, answering questions. People who don't know 100% what I do, I'm here to answer questions if you don't know what I do.
Michael, and then Will.
Same thing I say every year. If Dooley were here, she'd agree with me, I believe. And that is, there needs to be some redundancy here in some way in this department. He needs another half-time person, or he needs to have some kind of an agreement with another county or something, because we rely a lot on Don. He does a great job. But a one-man department, one-person department, is not in everybody's best interest, in my opinion.
I would agree, Mike. Will, you had your hand up?
Yes, I did. Now we concur. I'm just wondering, same budget and essentially the same stuff. Have you noticed any changes in terms of the world of measuring? Is there any new problems that we should be aware of? Or?
No new problems. I am noticing a lot of the smaller businesses are disappearing and being overtaken by bigger organizations. I just found out today that 3 of the gas stations in this county were owned by a smaller company, just got bought out back in January. I'm just learning it today.
Yeah, one, I was shocked it went to fill up and it had transformed overnight. It was like just how quickly they could change that. So.
Yeah. As far as the devices, I've got a few more devices, only like 20 or 30 more. But like I said, it's the transition from little mom-and-pop stores into the bigger gas stations like the Monster up in North Lansing, or in Lansing. It takes me 3/4 of a day to test all those pumps in there. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep. Anyone else? Peter Stein.
Yeah, could I ask you to comment on what Mike said? And so what would happen? What would we do if you, decided didn't like it anymore, or you got a better offer someplace else or something like that?
Well, hopefully that won't happen for another 4 years.
Well, hopefully, but It may. I mean, these things always happen. You could walk across the street and somebody ran into you. So what would we do in that circumstance?
There's a possibility of borrowing Cortland County's director. I know I used to work part-time for Cortland County when they were in need of help. I worked one day a week over there and was able to keep things going for them. And I think they would be willing to reciprocate that if I ended up getting hurt or something like that. There's a lot of counties that, you know, once you talk to them, ask them, they'll help you out. Chemung, Schuyler, and I think now Yates are all sharing one person for all three counties, which I'm really surprised the one person can get everything done in three counties.
And, I mean, it would be hard to believe that you could find someone. Somehow the person would have to learn on the job at that time, yeah, I would think.
Essentially, that's what I did, is learned on the job. There is a state trainer. The state provides training for somebody that you hire. If there's nobody sticking around to train the new person that comes in. So you can contact the state weights and measures, and they will come in and do training and work with a new person, get them up and running. And our local guy here in this area, he's from Vestal, Carl, he's great. He comes in probably once every 2 or 3 months to keep me updated on any new news that's coming down through from the state and feds. And
okay, well, I hope it doesn't arise. I double hope and triple hope, but it's a little comforting that you think there is a solution.
At least a temporary solution. And, you know, if I did up and leave or had some severe injury that I couldn't come back, you know, there is a solution until you find somebody to take my place.
Okay, thank you very much.
Anyone else? Rick, thank you very much for your time. And I think Mike brings up a good point, and that's something we should think about. All right? That's it. What? Don. Oh, I'm sorry, Don.
All right.
What did I say? Rick?
No, I'll try not to.
I'm sorry, Don.
Thank you, Don.
It's all
right. I was thinking Rick could take the job, but, you know, I mean, yeah, right. It's always a pleasure to have you here. Okay. Highway Department, Jeff Smith. It is in Chapter 4 or Section 4, page 150, OTRs 32, number 30 and 21. OTR 30 and number 21. Welcome, Jeff. Are both microphones down? Oh, yeah. You could pull the other one down, too, if you want to.
The double mic?
Double mic.
In stereo?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that good?
That's great.
Hello, how's everybody doing tonight?
We're waiting to hear from you to find out.
Budget presentation for the 2016 Highway Division. What you see on the slide at this time is the recommended budget. I'd like to point out a few things with this slide that I was actually looking at and Kevin brought to my attention as well. The 2016 recommended budget, that number, the $8,702,834 number is including including the OTR. Just want to make that clear. Maybe all of you know that after looking at a few budgets at this time. The next line under the 2016 recommended budget showing the revenue line is including the local net share. The portion of that, which is that number of the local net share, is $6,173,338, and you can find that in the interfund transfer section of the recommended budget book, contribution to defund, page 4-167, if you're interested in locating that. And then the next number, the 281,000, and we'll be discussing this as my presentation continues, is a 281,000 OTR. There's slight changes, as you can see, to the negative, 1.75%, 1.86%. I believe that's mostly due to revenues that came in having to do with the extreme winter relief and CHIPS state funding that bumped that up. Therefore, we spent that on the roads. I think it was for that reason. When we budget for CHIPS, we don't include the money that we in the last few years that the state has provided in the springtime an emergency, what they call extreme winter recovery. It's EWR. Funds, and we're very thankful for it, and it's definitely nice to see, but we would never include it in the budget and show it right now because we don't know for sure if it's coming. The I have actually a few major influences, and you know they are major influences, and the first one is something that we've been doing for a period of time. The second one is something that is, I believe anyway, and is becoming of much greater importance. And the third one is a new thing that I think is going to really do great things with the workings of the department. The first one is something, a program that we've been doing for a while now. It's fleet maintenance. And I've had I've been fortunate enough to have a conversation with a few of you over the last year to this regard. So some of you may be aware that this is going on at the department. Maybe not all of you are, and I wanted to take this opportunity to discuss it with you. In 2013, the highway purchased four F-250 pickup trucks. Those four pickup trucks cost just under $100,000, $98,750. As we go through the use of this truck and we track all the maintenance and fuel costs, and at the end of a two-year period, we sell them. And the four units together at auction obtained $65,640. Based on, you know, they all had different miles. These are our foreman trucks. They're equipped with plows. All this stuff is included in these numbers. Applying the difference and dividing by the total miles, we are having those trucks for that period of time, and this is an average number of 37 cents per mile. I looked around the internet today. I looked at a lot of different data in regards to that, and the one thing that I did note and remembered is that the mileage, just a comparison, you kind of got to keep wrapping your head different ways to know if 37 cents a mile is a good number, but this is one number I could really grab onto. The federal number for mileage that is paid out is for what is calculated at a cost for an individual to charge against use of a vehicle. And it's an average vehicle is 57 cents a mile. That's what the county actually uses for reimbursement to its employees. So that's a little bit of a comparison at 37 cents a mile. And I just go a little bit further. We've been doing this for a little longer than 2009. When we went back to 2009, we could include 17 units. And, you know, to show you just those the mass of 17 units, there's an average price of 34 cents per mile. A couple of the advantages, the very obvious advantages that we see with this is in owning the truck in those first 2 years, it is always under warranty. The only thing we're doing is maintenance items if necessary. And our employees are operating, you know, the most, you know, the safest, the most efficient vehicles on the road today. Just to kind of throw, that's the F-250. That's the truck that our foremen are driving around. It just gives you a visual as to what I'm, kind of a representative sample of what I'm talking about. The next major influence that I'd like to discuss is really something that has been in front of our department for a long time, at least the last few years, becoming ever more important. We're really not, and this isn't to say that we haven't been or realized that bridge maintenance was important. We've always had a bridge maintenance program. We've always dedicated a lot of funds and resources and personnel towards that. But I think we've come to a time where we're really starting to dedicate, personnel and allocate dedicated funding to that purpose. Really trying to reevaluate our bridge maintenance, working to create more robust bridge maintenance program priority. The program, through conversations with staff, really kind of, I feel like it's always been there, but we're really kind of trying to create it and really get organized about it. The enhancement we feel has began this year. We did a couple of projects. These are in-house projects. This is something that we're beginning to demonstrate our capabilities. These are projects that expand, I guess, if you will, the abilities of our personnel and our resources. We do have some very dedicated and very experienced bridge people on staff, but a couple people, it's hard to do a job this size. So we've really worked with training some extra people and developing a little more broad bridge crew. The two examples, I got a couple pictures I'm going to flip through here next, we did a deck rehabilitation on Salmon Creek Road in the town of Lansing. That's up way up in North Lansing. And Brooktondale Road, we did a full culvert replacement in the town of Caroline. This is the Brooktondale Road box culvert. That's about halfway through demolition of the existing box culvert. This is something that I was made aware of when I first started here a little over 3 years ago. We did the design of the beams. We precast the beams, purchased them through a low bidder, Jefferson Concrete. We've had it on the docket to do. We finally got to it this year. We're able to allocate the resources. The next picture is the finished product. It's not open yet. We still had to put the guide rail on it. As you can see in the foreground there, those are the posts where you're going to mount the posts to the beams that are crossing it. That's a full replacement. We had to all the permitting in-house. It's basically a small bridge. All the elements of a large bridge would be here. It's just a little bit smaller scale. The next bridge is the Salmon Creek Bridge in North Lansing. If you look close down through the rebar, you can see the water running. We got up here. We knew it was a problem. We had experienced some popping of concrete. We started doing some sounding, which is a process of determining hollow concrete where you have problems. After we got done sounding the deck and marking it out with paint, this is what we were left with that we decided to jackhammer out. This is a lot of handwork, very labor intensive. Jackhammer around all the rebar. You're replacing some of the rebar that's damaged or bent or rusted or had been exposed to some of the elements. After this, you would form it all in place from the bottom with scaffolding and pour it in, pour the concrete. This is going to be a high PSI concrete. It's not as easy to work with than your average concrete. The finished product out here came out excellent. You hear when a large truck goes over this bridge, it's solid, and it was a really good turnout. This is a larger project than what we normally would take on. The next slide, the next major influence I wanted to discuss tonight. I was able to. We have a administrative assistant that's been working in the department on a part-time basis. Without increasing our FTE schedule, we were able to shift some things around and create a full-time position. And talking with this individual. She's very excited about it. She's taking on the role of the Highway Department Communication Officer. The role is going to include both external and internal communication. Again, it's not like we don't do bridge work. It's not like we don't do communication. The external communication, I think we've come a long ways with. I think we do a fairly good job, but I know we can do a lot of better, especially when it comes to some of our website work. This person will, like I said, be in charge of external and internal communication. The department PIO representative, website enhancement, and the internal piece that's really important here is something that we want to build on, and it's kind of new, but it's going to include a monthly department newsletter with our own department updates as far as where we're at with projects. I'm envisioning having it circulated throughout the department, like I said, on a monthly basis, but actually include some employee information, kind of attaboys and things like that. This is a response to that part of this idea is in response to the employee climate survey findings. The next slide, we're getting into spending more money, unfortunately, Mike. Equipment replacement and acquisition. This is looking to procure a 15-year-old truck, although we like to replace our vehicles every 10 years as the replacement schedule. The vehicle that we're anticipating with this purchase replacing is a 2001 Sterling LT9500. The anticipated estimated revenue at auction for this vehicle is $25,000. This is a partial purchase request, and I'll get into this much further with the OTRs. But with this purchase, our target number that is in our budget for equipment replacement is $424,000 annually. We have a balance of $189,000 in this account after we purchased this first truck, and I'll get into that number more when I get to the OTR. And slide we have is highway budget history. You can see there's very little change in the last few years. Pretty hard to see there's so little change. We have a commodity trend slide. I have the numbers in front of me. I'd like to do the graph just to show the trend. But for your own information, this graph of 2015 is showing a difference of salt prices increasing $1.66. The asphalt price is almost straight across the board with a very small increase of 5 cents. The gas prices and the diesel prices have both gone down. You can kind of see that in those last two red and green blocks. The gas price, these are all average prices as well. It has gone down an average of 80 cents per gallon for gas and 73 cents per gallon for diesel. And the next slide is new this year. This is a slide of showing our average overall pavement quality on all county roads. As you look across that, it looks like a ribbon. It was shown to me initially in a 3D kind of format, and I kind of liked it, so I stuck with it. To explain this out, and based on some of the history that I've been told, in 2005 and 6, going into 7, was our last bond cycle at Tompkins County. That's when they started allocating extra funds to the highway department to work on improving the road condition, the overall road condition. And you can see that it does take a pretty good rise in condition rating. And then if I remember correctly, and I'm sure other people in the room know better than me, but I think around 2006, 7, and 8 is when diesel prices, asphalt prices, everything was going through the roof, and the economy was in trouble. So even though the county had dedicated extra funds, there was it was a troubling time, and the money allocated was having problems with keeping up with what was needed out there, and I'm really kind of guessing at that, but that does show a pretty good trend. I found it very interesting looking at this simple graph. As you go on down the line, our funds were pretty level, pretty even, and as you can imagine, as everything just continues to get more expensive, with the same funds, then you see a decreasing graph in the overall index, down to a low of, I kind of lined it out there, that bottom pitch is 64.5 for your information. And then, we're looking at a time right now with, where that you folks have stood behind, and to your credit, have done another round of road maintenance bonding, and I believe pretty surely that sudden rise in overall condition index, pavement quality on average for all our roads is due to that directly due to that increase in funding from our road maintenance bonds. And we're presently in the second year of a 15-year plan on that. What you see here is the draft. I got to emphasize the draft. These are the roads we're planning on doing in the next season, 2016, road construction map. I'll just kind of read them off because they're not that easy to see, and I think you have printouts too. But if you look up in the top right-hand corner, I'll go clockwise. We have Groton City Road, Asbury Road, West Dryden Road, Irish Settlement Road, Old 76 out in Caroline, South Danby Road, North Applegate Road, and Perry City Road. I think all of you have heard me say this before. I'm quite sure that this is a draft list. In the springtime, I will be supplying and sharing a more updated list. It's very likely that most of these roads will get done this year, but in the event that something happens over the winter and we have a road that really rises to the top on, or the bottom, if I could say, on condition, and we really need to start allocating other funds, then we'll have to do that. And I also like to say, too, this doesn't mean that we don't actually do some shim, small section paving repairs, shoulder repairs, other spot type construction. These would be like our main roads that we're allocating paving improvements and drainage to. And this is our next map, is a capital project map. There are other projects, capital projects that are upcoming and that are hopefully finishing this year. These are the projects that are planned to begin in the 2016 construction season or earlier or later, but at least be in construction phase sometime during 2016. Just to go around again, we have the Groton City Road Bridge. That is actually starting this year, actually starting next week. But it's likely, if we don't have a nice, pleasant fall, that there may be a period of shutdown and then restart up in 2016. Mallaryville Red Mill Bridges are in design. We had a public meeting there. Last week, things went well, and that is planned for construction next season. The Pine Tree Road Pedestrian Path Project has long awaited. I think we're on a real strong and legitimate timeline at this time. Things are really falling into place. We're hoping to go to bid late this year on that project with an award, and then very early next year have that contractor able to procure some long lead items and then shrink it down to a very short construction frame right in the middle heart of summer, trying to work around some of Cornell's big dates. Ellis Hollow Road Phase 3, not sure if that's actually going to go to construction next year, but we are in a design phase right now. We're working through some details. The East Hill Pedestrian Safety Improvement Project, like to see that go next year, but again, that is in design right now. It is planned for next year. And then to finish off what next year could encompass, the Waterbury Road Bridge project. That bridge is awarded. I've been in contact with the low bid awarded contractor, and they're planning on going to construction as soon as weather allows in the spring. Quick slide. We've seen it many times. Our full-time equivalents, I referred to it a little earlier. There's no change. It's the same number. I was able to just shuffle some things around and not increase that. We've had that same full-time equivalent history for 3 years. Again, I said this last year, I really don't see myself adding to that. I think we're at a good staffing level. It, should some programs change or needs arise, I'll be coming back and explaining it that way, but I think we're doing good on that respect. Okay, this slide, over target request, supported by tentative budget. Back to the earlier slide, when I was talking in reference to the purchase of a new plow dump truck for snow and ice control, I had mentioned that there was going to be $189,000 left in our target equipment account. The first OTR number 30, is our first priority. It is expensed at $46,000. And if you add 180, I did it right here, so it's easy for me. If you add 189 and 46,000, it's $235,000, which would, the 46,000 would augment the current target for purchase of a second plow truck. The theme here is plow trucks this year, if you haven't figured that out. The OTR 21, second priority, the expense on that vehicle, and I have two more slides to follow up this slide that I'm going to be explaining this further. There's an expense of $235,000. It's a one-time expense. This is that is looking to purchase a third plow truck. And it's replacing an old truck. We're not expanding our fleet or anything like that. All these are replacements for what I'm going to be talking to right here on the next slide. In 2006, Tompkins County purchased four new 10-wheel dump trucks equipped with snow and ice control equipment. All four of these trucks, as you can guess, now we're going into 2016, are now 10 years old. We're trying to stay on a 10-year replacement cycle. This year's OTR, number 30, number 21, request is for two units at a cost of $235,000 apiece. The request brings our equipment replacement schedule closer to balance. And then I have a couple notes that are pretty much very similar to that. If I go to the next slide, you'll see how it's kind of breaking down in numbers again. So it's very clear. This is for, we're looking for three plow trucks. One is in part of our target budget. Then there's a balance of the target budget that is augmented by the first OTR of 46,000, which adds up to 235,000 to give us a second plow truck. And then there's an OTR that's all by itself that's in the amount of a third plow truck. Just to discuss that for a moment, one of those we're doing the two OTRs to purchase, replace two trucks. The first truck that's part of the target budget is replacing a 2001 Sterling. I mentioned that. What we're trying to do is spread this out. We have four trucks that are coming of age all at one time. In my experience, I've seen municipalities do this a few other places, and it's really, sometimes you have to do it. You're at a point where you really have no other choice, and that was probably the case with this back in 2006. But I really think trying to spread units out over time is a lot better way of doing it, so you're not facing this sort of thing. So what we're trying to do here is replace two of the units, and then maybe next year replace one or two units, so that in 10 years we're not back here again. So that's really kind of the thought process of showing you this over target request and requesting this over target request. So the total equipment request for 2016 is $705,000. Let that sink.
Yeah. Questions for Jeff. Peter Stein?
This is an overview question. Presumably, you have a certain fleet, and you know that you're going to have to replace them every 10 years, so you'll do two vehicles a year or three or whatever, okay? You've got that in your head or written down. So why does it require OTRs? Is it that we don't supply you with enough money to replace your machines every 10 years or what? Or am I misinterpreting something?
I think the OTR is a valuable tool, and especially in this case, to make aware that this issue exists. I think 424,000 or that number thereabouts for the last several years has been okay. It's maintained what units that we needed to replace. These units are now coming at that 10-year all at once. So rather than try and ask for four units, we're trying to spread it out with two.
This is an anomaly of some sort that these units are coming all at once.
I would call it that. That's what we're talking about.
So then that's going to be balanced by a negative anomaly when we don't. Purchase trucks because we don't need to, because they're only 8 years old. Is that right? Or?
Well, the anomaly was 10 years ago, and now we're trying to erase the anomaly by spreading the purchase of trucks out over a few years rather than coming to you with a request to buy four this year.
Okay, thank you.
Martha, you had your hand up. And Mike, and then Leslie.
Yeah, it might be kind of related to that question. So to go back to your first slide about fleet maintenance. So are you saying that, so you purchased four trucks in 2013. Are you saying you're on a... Are you trying to say you're going to sell them as they come off of warranty? You're going to be on a pattern of cycling through them?
There's nothing contained in the budget this year for purchase of pickup trucks. I'm talking about a major influence within the department, and it's a practice that we've been doing for several years. I just wanted to make everyone aware of it. But to answer your question, we purchased four pickup trucks in the same year, and for a dollar amount of almost $100,000, and then we traded them in at auction, and we received $65,000. They're only two-year-old pickup trucks. They did retain a lot of value. They're in very good condition, relatively low mileage. I believe their warranties at 2 years. I think they're three-year, $36,000, but some of them may have had more than $36,000 on them. In 3 years, that's still not a lot of mileage. So I think they might have been off warranty because I think their mileage was all over the maximum, but they were still only 2 years old. And we keep track of all the work that we do on every vehicle. We you know, our electronic fuel system tracks that gas key. We know exactly how much gas has gone and what the cost of fuel usage is. The entire package altogether, all the cost that we have associated with this vehicle comes down to an average of the four vehicles of 37 cents. Some were very low. Some were about, one was like 40-some cents, but then there were a couple that were in their 20s.
Okay, so what you're saying is that you're not asking for extra funds to do this, but your strategy is to turn them over quickly before they start getting into expensive repairs. But the snow plows we keep 10 years or so.
Right, the snow plows you keep a lot longer, right.
So these guys have, like, you're saying 36,000 or so on for a couple of years? Okay. On the bridge crew issue, so are you talking about doing more bridges in-house than we used to contract out, the same kinds of bridges that now you're saying that you're developing your staff to where they can do them in-house?
I'm not looking at necessarily getting away from a capital program where we are replacing bridges. What I'm trying to emphasize is that we want to better maintain what we have and keep what we have so that the replacement isn't as necessary on the same type schedule that we've been seeing.
Okay, so this kind of heavy-duty maintenance, which kind of looks like capital projects to me, but it's instead of waiting longer till something is a really big problem, you're dealing with it. Okay. And then the snow truck that you've sold, the 2001 snow truck that you sold for $25,000, who bought that?
That will go to auction. That has not been sold yet.
Okay.
That's an estimated value at auction.
Okay.
They're usually pretty accurate, and we could show you other trucks. Who buys them? Contractors, small, any size contractors that might be looking to procure a truck. Other municipalities will buy them, set up as plow trucks, units, snow and ice units.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Mike, Loveland, Will.
Jeff, this really might be directed to Joe or Rick. If, for example, we were to infuse more cash into this budget, could we avoid capital borrowing costs this year in any of the projects? Or could we buy more asphalt and bring our road quality up? What would happen if we added $100,000 or $200,000 to the budget here?
You've described the bookends of what would happen. One end of the spectrum would be, instead of borrowing $1.2 million, which is now the ongoing amount that we borrow for road improvements, you would borrow $100,000 less. You'd pay cash for the first $100,000 and then borrow the next $1.1 million. So you'd have an effect on your debt service costs, small one, for the next 10, 15, 20 years. So that's one end of the spectrum. The other is you would put it into additional scope of work, more miles of paving. I'd have to look to Jeff to be able to tell you how much $100,000 buys in terms of additional mileage, but that's the other end of the spectrum.
It's estimated it's $100,000 is about a mile of road, roughly. Depending on what that mile of road needed, it may be. But on average, an asphalt blacktop overlay is $100,000 a mile.
Loveland.
So thanks, Mike. That's partly what I wanted to find out about putting additional monies into the budget, especially around road maintenance. My other question, Jeff, is were you including in that budget for the snowplows purchase, the OTRs, were you including the potential cash that's coming from the sale of the old one? That's included in that $400,000.
We don't typically do that because we don't know exactly what we're doing,
right.
And we would, and that usually if it's funded, we want the unit here before we're selling the unit. So it would be hard to sell the unit and know and have that cash on hand to purchase the next unit.
Now, I understand that. I'm just asking you if you were including that number, because then where does that go? I mean, you just said to Martha that you're pretty accurate in what it will sell for, and that's the plan, and these are recommended. So what happens to that when it's sold?
Our revenue is shown in the budget for as revenue as balancing in the equipment defund.
Try to pull back there.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Those estimated numbers.
Will, Joe, and then Peter.
Thank you. I just had a few disparate questions. One, I was interested in your the bar chart about your road quality. And can you speak just a little more about how you evaluate that? And you said this was average. Are there wide disparities between the quality of our roads or I mean, are there horrible roads and great roads?
This is a new slide this year. Yeah. And again, it was, if you look, can I get it back? Look at that. That's pretty easy. You're good. If you look at the slide, the years, and I can get into this a little further. 2005 up until 2013 is a PQI index. That's a previous system that was developed by previous engineers at Tompkins County, and the information was set in there. We have more recently purchased a cartograph software program that also has a module that is geared towards pavement maintenance. And so the OCI on the last 2 years is overall condition index.
So is this based on modeling, or are you actually going out into sampling?
We're actually going out and evaluating the roads. The more the merrier, as the cartograph people put it. But you want to do it at least twice a year. It's a snapshot of the road. It's an evaluation scale. We try and do it only between a couple people at the department, so that because everyone's going to look at a road and put it on a different scale, and if you set two people in two different directions, the scales may not match. So we generally will have them ride together, ride over the road, and then quality index. There's all kinds of software. It's a handheld unit, and there's some menus that you actually go down and you give it a score on a lot of different elements. It's drainage, pavement. A lot of different elements.
Okay.
That's how those numbers are generated. And then the system takes all of our roads and at the bottom says this is what your overall quality of all your roads.
There's good roads.
Some roads are in the 90s. Some roads are in the 40s.
Right. I like the trend line, though, so it looks like it's positive.
That's why I was happy to show it today.
One other question. You were talking about the high cost of salt. Do we procure that locally? Because we do manufacture it locally, and no discount for...
Well, we always have some.
Yeah.
That's the one good thing. The average price of salt is about $40 a ton is about what we pay. It did go up, I don't even want to talk about salt. Winter's almost here. we are lucky to have a close by mine that we can get the salt from. It is delivered, from trucks locally. We do pay a lot less than a state average on salt.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
I have Joe and then Peter, and then we're going to move on, hopefully.
Yeah, and I just this is only about the numbers. This budget is not as complex as DSS, but it is kind of hard to figure out the money side of things, especially how much property tax goes into this budget and where the OTR support's coming from. So the highway fund is a separate fund. It can't raise its own property taxes. The general fund raises its property taxes for it. So the property tax support for this budget is actually an interfund transfer from the general fund. If you look on page 167 of Section 4. You can see it. It's contribution to the D fund. D is the highway fund. And you can see in here that the property tax contribution for next year is $4,478,246. That's how much we're putting into it in property taxes. That's up by a little over $100,000 from last year. That doesn't mean he's drifted outside target. It means that target was adjusted because the blue-collar wage settlement was done. That got factored in target. And I think there was some town snowplow money that also affected target. So the increased property tax contribution is about 100. It reflects the revised target. The OTRs are one-time OTRs. They're coming out of the highway fund balance. The highway fund has its own fund balance. And if you want to look at that, that's on page section 2, page 23, where we show our fund balances. So when you put those two numbers together, that kind of explains the bottom line of what's going on in this budget.
Peter Stein, thank you, Joe.
Yeah, first, just an observation. I want to point out that that graph up there looks like we have sort of very strong changes, but just there's a very offset zero on it, and that the straight lines that are actually ramping down gives you the wrong impression. And if you go through the numbers, this is not a very strong deviation from the beginning to the end of that cycle. So I just thought I'd make that point. But I have a question that I don't think you addressed. Ms. Inside Outside that you hired, the communications person, what can you say a little bit more about what the communications are, both inside and outside, what kinds of things she'll be doing?
Absolutely. It's an inside person that's already working for us. It's not a new hire. She is very excited about the job, the proposal. Right now in the department, there are multiple people doing various aspects of internal and external communication. Internal communication is limited to memos and basically our once-a-month staff meeting. There's recently been, you know, coming out of the climate survey, there's been a lot of discussion about our employees that want to know more about what's going on. And I certainly encourage them to come find out and, you know, track me down. Nothing's a secret. We certainly have no reason not to share, but everyone's busy. Everybody's heading in different directions. So the thought came that if this person could come in, become that person, have that duty, it would create a whole extra, you know, something that we haven't been doing as far as an internal communication module. What that actually looks like in a monthly newsletter, we've recently have purchased and installed some large screen televisions or smart TVs that can hook to our Wi-Fi. We're in the process of figuring out they have an incredible amount of capabilities, but it'd be nice to have that one person internally that's updating that information, you know, kind of walking around, talking with me, interviewing, if we will, certain people, maybe throwing some recent pictures around and getting people where they can go to those locations and find that information. We've also talked about, and I think I've mentioned a few times now, is a monthly newsletter, employee birthdays, project updates, budget presentations like this sort of thing. That would be the internal new stuff. The outside stuff, it would be consolidated into that one position rather than multiple people doing similar tasks.
Is that dealing with constituents when a road is being changed?
I would still be doing a lot of that as far as it wouldn't change project management and as far as how we communicate with it would be more in line with announcements of road closings and that sort of thing.
Okay, thanks.
Public announcements.
Martha, last question.
Joe, you said page 23, section 2.
Yeah.
So there's a road fund and there's the highway machinery fund. Those are both.
Right, it would come out of the road fund. They're both highway related. Okay. Leslie asked one time where proceeds would go from the sale of it would go into the road machinery fund.
Okay.
This is the road fund would be the source.
Good. Thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thank you.
Nice
Have
job.
A nice night.
Up next is personnel. This will be Amy's first trip through the process. She has Jackie Thomas with her, who's been through many times. Welcome, Amy.
Good evening.
Good evening.
So the first slide is just representing our request for expenditures, and as you'll see, there is a percent change there. The dollar change is reflective of an OTR request, less fringe benefits, so that represents that change. So any questions about that?
No. You go through the process, and and we'll do questions at the end.
Perfect.
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. So under full-time equivalents, we've recognized that there is a need to enhance the service delivery in support of key organizational priorities such as recruitment, diversity and inclusion, performance management, leadership development, and others through the development of a comprehensive compliant human resources program. The recommended staffing structure submitted for this budget is reflective of the results of a preliminary analysis of what our needs are to complement the skill set of the existing staff. That's why there's a represented half FTE decrease there. That was necessary in order for us to recruit to hire a person with a human resources skill set that we believe will be beneficial with regard to recruitment and the efforts in further developing the human resources program. At the same time, we are investing in our existing staff and providing training and development opportunities in those areas. The half-time FTE, I'll be honest, will cause a bit of a challenge in our office with regard to front office coverage, but we wanted to stay within budget, and we are looking at ways in which to make that work. The over-target request is as a result of the climate survey findings and has to do with training initiatives, primarily leadership development. The major influences with this budget proposal are the development of a comprehensive human resources program. Since I began and I continue to work with staff to review and assess the policies and practices to determine the need for any revisions or updates and implementation of new processes as necessary. We've been evaluating the department staffing structure and individual duties to identify efficiencies in the way we perform the work, as well as opportunities for improved service delivery with automation and other new ideas. The department staff will be offered and are being offered specialized training and development opportunities to further develop their expertise in their areas, as well as cross-training into other areas within the department. Climate survey results are a driver for this budget with regard to both the human resources initiatives and the feedback from both the survey results as well as department heads and employees with regard to the need for a human resources, more of a human resources presence and structure program. So our goal is to be known as a valued resource and support for departments, and build upon that. I listed a couple of the key results of the climate survey, which we will, of course, focus on, primarily through the training funds and other initiatives. The organizational training needs will be identified further through evaluation and discussion, and the plan would be to form a group of stakeholders, cross-section of the county leadership, to discuss and evaluate the investment of training funds. So, I think that's it.
Questions for the commissioner? Martha?
Hi, Amy. I'm afraid I don't quite understand the shifting. You're taking a half an FTE out of your roster, and that's going to what exactly?
Okay, so there was a retirement in the department, and so on a temporary basis, that slip spot has been filled with two part-time employees, temporary part-time employees. In looking at the personnel funding for staff in the department, we recognize the need that in order to recruit someone with the skill set that we felt would be beneficial with regard to human resources expertise, education expertise, and recruitment initiatives, that we needed a certain salary. So we made a concession there in budgeting for a higher salaried individual, which necessitated removing half FTE.
I see. Okay. And is
in order not to go over target.
Right. Okay. And so that shift hasn't happened yet. Is that right?
That's no, correct. Not yet.
Okay. And is that a new position that we don't have at this point, or is there?
It is a new position. It will be a new position. We are, you know, as long as the budget is approved, we will begin to develop a specific job specification that incorporates more of a human resources component to it. The vision being someone that has current recruitment skills and abilities, community outreach, to reach a more diverse population and to increase our candidate pool numbers, and to also assist with other human resources initiatives and coming into compliance with those.
Okay, and so I'm looking at the roster on page 229, which shows the different job titles. So would that be the personnel technician?
That is a title that we budgeted for. That falls between the personnel assistant and the administrative services coordinator. Jackie falls between there, and we probably will not use that exact title, but that would be the where the position salary range would fall.
All right, thank you very much.
Yes.
Anyone else have any questions? Let me ask a couple. The department staff will be offered specialized training and development opportunities. Do you have money in your budget to do that, or how will you accomplish that?
There is some funding in our budget to do that, but there are other resources by which we can achieve that. Our new EAP program has a great deal of resources for training that is no cost, so including training in areas such as the Family Medical Leave Act and other human resource type programming. I'm also working. What's that? Yes, as well as the EAP program does offer the leadership and development type training that is beneficial. I'm also working personally to train our, you know, the staff in the department and cross-training so that we have a more cohesive group that's capable of covering, you know, in the absence of employees that they can more easily pick up those job duties, that type of thing. But again, I'm currently working directly with some of the staff and training with regard to specific HR competencies.
I had two more. The other one is the organizational training needs. When you're talking about the organization, are you talking about outside personnel or the whole county? What are you talking about?
Yeah, that would be the whole county, and that would be as a result of the climate survey results and in relation to, I'll let Joe speak to the OTR request.
Yeah, I'm going to go to Joe in 1 minute.
Sure.
And a question I have, and I guess it's relevant. We recently switched from an old EAP program to a new one. Do you want to say something about that and how that's working?
Yes, absolutely. I'm very excited at the introduction of the new EAP program. The depth of services and support in...
EAP stands for what?
I'm sorry, Employee Assistance Program. Thank you. So the movement towards a new model for employee assistance programs is representative in this new vendor or provider in that they offer not only the traditional counseling services, but they offer other resources, much more comprehensive resources, with the intention of assisting employees with personal and family and work-related needs that might otherwise distract them or cause absenteeism. So there are supportive services. There are extensive training resources that we intend to utilize at no cost and a process inherent in the system at no cost that will track the training. So this will assist us with the mandatory training as well as leadership and development initiatives and professional development to some degree. But the program itself also, you know, I think serves as a perk or a benefit that employees are pleased about, as well as a tool for departments with staff management. There's a comprehensive assistance to supervisors with employee disciplinary needs, that type of thing, through an administrative referral process that used to be known as like a mandated EAP. But there's assistance and support from the provider throughout the whole process.
Thank you. Joe, you were going to make a comment, I believe, about the training.
Yeah. If you look at the budget, you can see that originally the OTR was, the request was $75,000. I was a collaborator on this request, so I can speak to it. When we first began to talk about the 2016 budget, I think our goal was, and we talked about this at retreat, was first of all to recognize that training is really important to our workforce. And second, ideally it would be a sustained commitment. It would be a targeted increase in training that we could have year after year. As the process went on and as the realities of our resources became pretty evident, it was clear that we could not afford $75,000 within the targets that I had in ongoing training. So the OTR that is in front of you today is less than what was requested, still an important increase, but less than what was requested, and also it's one time. It's not targeted, it's one time. And I would hope that over time, that if you approve the increase as proposed here, we can work on making this a part of our target. We can increase this so that year after year we have access to these kinds of training dollars, understanding that we are working with 7% fewer employers than we had a few years ago and trying to do as much work, if not more, than we were doing back when we when our employment peaked. So that was, again, background on the OTR and a little editorial comment as well.
And if I could add to that, that was, thank you, Joe. There, you know, there's evidence that we have a significant pool of employees that are kind of mid-career that have expressed that they would value leadership development, career development in order to, you know, grow in their careers and be retained by the county. So, you know, one of the initiatives envisioned with these funds would be definitely towards that. And as far as succession planning and career leadership development and career training. So.
Anyone else? Thank you both very much. Moving on, planning department, Ed is here and some of his staff. And it is in your book, section 4, page 238, and he has OTRs 49 through 52.
Yeah, that's easier. Okay, thank you for having us here tonight. Our budget, as you'll see, is actually a slight decrease overall from last year. So we're staying conservative overall. But in terms of major influences, we feel that we are constantly being asked by the community and by the legislature and actually by our own initiative to expand and broaden the areas of involvement in critical issues in the community. And some of the drivers of that over the past few years and continue to be climate change and energy issues seem to become more and more prominent in our efforts every single year. Housing, the problem that never goes away, and we're very actively engaged in a number of fronts, you'll see in a moment, to work on the housing issue in this community. And then the kind of the broader issue of how this community grows and develops, efforts to focus development in appropriate places and at the same time conserve those resources that people value so much about this community, the open spaces, the farms, the forest lands, the gorges and streams and the lake. Just to give you an idea, what are we going to do with the money that you're budgeting for the planning department in 2016? Some of the major projects, and these are by no means the entire work program for the department, but on the development of the economy, a number of initiatives in the tourism area, of starting to actually develop the Blue Way Trail around Cayuga Lake. We have a grant in right now that, if successful, will allow us to start to do that. The two priority areas of the tourism plan that will be prominent in 2016 are the agriculinary and the heritage tourism efforts. We will be working on energy needs for a growing economy in the energy focus area strategy that was outlined in the county comprehensive plan adopted this year. In housing, we will continue across the board efforts. The housing needs assessment that was done 10 years ago will be updated. We're starting that process now. And then the strategy that follows from that will be updated in 2016. The Community Housing Development Fund, which was just renewed, we're administering that and will continue to do so. And we intend to undertake with our partner agencies and departments in the county a close look at the human service housing needs. We know that many of our programs, whether it be youths, seniors, social services, people with disabilities or impairments, have specific housing needs that often aren't being met, and we need to be more strategic in looking at those. In transportation, a couple of things identified in the comprehensive plan were to work with the Highway Division on recognizing that transportation funding is uncertain and always getting more expensive. What are the critical elements we need to be focused on for the long term? And also looking at transformation of the way we get around by looking at electric vehicle charging strategy to allow us to continue to be mobile while reducing our greenhouse gas emissions from transportation. Under natural and water resources, we're looking to try to, in 2016, integrate a number of programs, including our aquifer program, stream corridor program, some of our open space efforts, into what is nationally being recognized as another element of our community infrastructure, our green infrastructure, those natural systems that perform all kinds of functions for us that we don't always recognize. And when we have to do it and spend money to do those by using what's called gray or hard infrastructure, it's much more expensive. So we're really upping our efforts in that area. The Natural Features Focus Area Connectivity Study will look at how do we interconnect our open spaces that are currently protected to provide for their long-term viability and provide multiple benefits from watershed protection to wildlife corridor movement. And with respect to our waterfront, the DOT relocation feasibility study we're looking at right now, we're working on with a great grant from the state. We hope in 2016 we'll turn into action to actually move that facility from the waterfront and allow redevelopment. Climate change is becoming more of an effort in our program. In 2016, we'll be working with emergency response on a disaster recovery plan, something that's been high on their agenda for a number of years, to have the community prepared in the instance of a disaster, which we hope we won't experience, but which the probability of experiencing is increasing. And how well you prepared has been shown nationally to dramatically affect how quickly you recover. Part of that, or related to that, will be actually a assessment of the risks that our county facilities might face from different types of storms and events that might be associated with more frequently occurring with climate change. In energy and greenhouse gas emissions, we'll be working to make the Energize New York PACE financing actually work in the community effectively. The microgrid feasibility study at the airport will be completed in 2016, the first phase of that. The energy roadmap will be completed hopefully this year with an update of our strategy next year. The Ithaca 2030 district is something that we envision the county participating in this community, with county buildings being enrolled in that district when it's created in the next probably several months. And also working with municipalities to identify tools that will allow them to promote renewable energy development in their communities. In the area of neighborhoods and communities, in 2016, we'll be working with the health department and others to develop a healthy community strategy, how to make our communities design and develop our communities in ways that actually promote more healthy lifestyles and involvement in social interactions in the community. We'll be looking at development of priority trail segments, which we've started working on actively this year, and identifying with local municipalities opportunities for sites that would be ripe for development in existing communities. And then planning for county property and operations. We hope to see the old library redevelopment move to completion, that process, so that it will be in the hands of the developer and the project will be underway in 2016. And then we have been working this year to get better management of our county energy, including our building energy and our fleet energy records, and they're getting and all their sustainability efforts so we can better monitor progress in the future. So we're doing all that with the same people that we've had this year and fewer than we had 2 years ago. Over target requests that were supported in the county administrator's recommended budget, the sustain the stream corridor restoration program with a $25,000 one-time recommendation. We had requested target because this has been an ongoing program for many years. And again, with increased threats from flooding, increased impacts on water quality, this program is important to both of those things. And we think it'll be ongoing, but we're happy to have funding for the next year. Similarly, the energy program, we had funding this year. We see that accelerating in terms of needs in next year as the energy roadmap, the energy and economic development task force recommendations come forward. So we asked for $30,000 to sustain and advance efforts in that area. And then a new request this year was for money to recapitalize the Capital Reserve Fund for Natural, Scenic, and Recreational Resource Protection. And I just want to spend a moment discussing that one. The one over target, not supported in the administrator's budget, was a request by the EMC for funds to continue to review and update the unique natural areas inventory. The Capital Reserve Fund was originally established in 2005 and has been funded since then with rollover funds, with funds from sale of properties to state parks, things of that nature. We have, with the budget being trimmed over the years, there hasn't been much rollover to replenish that lately. And we think that's been an extremely successful but underfunded project program. And during the years we've had it, we've protected or participated in protection of 703 acres at a very cost-effective price to the county. A couple examples from the past years. This was in the town of Ithaca out near Robert H. Treeman State Park, where 113 acres that adjoin Cayuga Inlet were protected with a county cost of only $20,000. The town of Ithaca participated, Finger Lakes Land Trust participated, and that is a property that starts to link together state park lands, Cornell lands, private preserves, and into a unified kind of open space system that helps protect the corridor along Cayuga Inlet. This acquisition in Dryden, 170 acres, county cost of $25,000. Actually, it's the area outlined in yellow, and it actually provides the permanent connection of the Hammond Hill and Yellow Barn State Forests. So we have a continuous area of open space. Those are, particularly Hammond Hill, heavily used for recreation. There's also linkage to Cornell University Natural Areas and the Finger Lakes Land Trust Park Nature Preserve. That boardwalk was developed by the Land Trust and the Park Nature Preserve, and some funded in part with funds from our tourism program. So that's opening up areas for the public to be able to utilize and enjoy our natural wonders in the county. And then a different kind of project in the town of Caroline was the Lichens Conservation Easement. That's the area in yellow. What it does, it's north of Shindaygan Hollow State Forest. And if you see the red line running kind of between the forest and their property, that's the Finger Lakes Trail. So this protects a corridor on both sides of the Finger Lakes Trail that's privately owned property, will continually be privately owned and pay property taxes, but is going to be permanently managed as a forest with limited development. What might we do with the funds we're asking for in 2016? Well, right now we're aware of potential projects in these categories. Farmland protection easements, voluntary donation of easements, but require funding for closing costs, for long-term stewardship and management of those easements. There's at least one or two farms interested in protecting their farmland. Stream corridor floodplain protection, again, in the view of increased flooding threats, the more floodplain we can protect, the less likelihood of damage downstream in developed areas from floods in the future. Water-related recreational access, that's one of the most desired improvements to our recreational access in the community, and there are opportunities that may emerge along some of our creeks and potentially along the lake. Trail corridor easement acquisition, we have some priority trails working on, including the extension of the Black Diamond Trail, some connector trails out into adjoining communities, into Dryden, into Caroline, and we may have opportunities to secure those trail corridors in 2016. And then, as I mentioned earlier, one of our projects is to look at how to connect our existing protected natural areas, and there are properties currently being discussed for potential protection through either easement or acquisition that would accomplish that. So that was our big new initiative for the year. And we're happy to answer questions on anything at all in the budget at this point.
Martha?
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Hi, Ed. On the Human Services Housing Needs Assessment, so that'll be a separate. Is that something we haven't? Seems like something we haven't actually done before.
We haven't really done it. I know some of the different agencies have done their own assessments of the needs of their clients or constituencies. But what we want to do is take an overall look. We hear of unmet needs. There have been individual efforts to try to meet some of those needs. But it kind of gets lost in the overall discussion of housing demand, that there are folks that have particular difficulties in finding housing, and that we need to pay close attention to how we might facilitate housing that will serve those folks.
So that's separate from...
But we hope to coordinate it with the overall housing needs assessment effort.
Okay, thanks. And the three areas that you've got where you have OTRs that were requested as target but put in there as one time. This is a joke question. So we have... we used to use, often use, sort of up to three years of one-time funding, which is maybe a gimmick, but it means there's a little bit more predictability for a program like this. It flags it so that two years hence, we're really looking at it hard again. Is that something that was considered here, or what would you react?
Frankly, no, but it's not an impossible thing either. Whenever I talk about one-time money, I always say we try to make sure it's tied to non-recurring things. Mm-hmm. And I always have a little caveat that sometimes things slip through. These are a couple of these are becoming almost routine recurring expenses. So we tried, but here again, we just ran out of money before we could get recurring money to these few initiatives in planning. So rather than to just cut them out, we said let's put some one-time money behind it again. Could you make it a multi-year? We don't have any multi-years in this budget. We haven't done it for a couple of years, but could you do that? It's certainly within fiscal policy to allow you to do that, to designate it for 2 years or 3 years, I think is the max. It means that Rick would tie up some of our fund balance for that period of time to make sure we don't spend it for other things, that it's captured for that. But sure, that is something that the legislature could choose to do.
I mean, they're not huge expenses. Added together, it ends up, you know, the three together would be a chunk on the property tax. But as one times within the fund balance, would that be a help, Ed?
Well, anything that provides a little bit of stability to the funding is helpful, certainly. Yes, we didn't ask for multi-year because that really has been, we kind of been moving away from that a little bit. It's a little complicating in terms of keeping track in the budget, but certainly we would appreciate it if any of these could be made multi-year.
All right, thank you.
Anyone else? Mike.
I'm probably just not reading this right. I'm looking at salary and wages on section 4, page 235. And it looks like there's like a 10% increase, and I'm just wondering why that is. It's going from 480,000 to 528, and I don't see us adding anybody. So,
yeah, this is an anomaly in the budget this year because we had the tourism program separate in the budget, and it really functionally is in planning department. So this year we brought it fully into the planning department to reflect how functionally it's operating. So that's really the position that came that is in our department but was kind of treated separately in the budget previously.
Where was it treated before? Just so I know.
It was just the tourism program had a separate line item.
Oh, so
yeah.
And
I guess it probably shows somewhere in there and then it has a zero next to it for this year compared to last year. I don't know how it's showing, but that's what we did that was different, but it doesn't reflect any actual increase in cost.
That makes sense. Yeah, that's why I was curious. Okay. It's in one of the other departments.
Mike, use the microphone. Okay.
Oh, sorry. It's in another department. It's its own department, I guess. So, okay.
Martha?
Is that looking down the same column, then local revenues jumps from 26,000 to 100?
That, again, is the tourism program support for that position being brought into the budget.
It's not about the budget. I know we all are, and you are certainly aware of the issue up by the hospital and the land that we own. Where are we on that? Are we thinking about that? I'm sure you are.
It's on my agenda to try to come to some kind of resolution this fall. Ironically, maybe, I had an inquiry from one of the adjoining property owners just today. And there may be some interest in them making some kind of an offer. I've said if you have an offer to make, make it so we can consider it along with other things. We've been talking to some housing people about something of a different nature, whether that would be feasible there. But we will have some options to bring to GO this fall.
Thank you very much. I knew it would. It didn't just slip away. Anyone else? Thank you very much, Ed.
Okay.
Information Technology Services, Chapter 4, page 157. And Greg has a 1 OTR, number 43.
Good evening. So to get us started here, just a quick summary of the budget. The expenditures increased slightly because of some of the service contracts that we have, but there's also a reduction in the revenue, which is the result of us losing the revenue that we had in our budget to support the phone service for the Alcohol and Drug Council. They've converted over to a new phone system that they support themselves, so we should bill them in the past. So that is the explanation there. So with those two combined, you've got a net local difference of the $13,544. So that's a quick overview and summary. The major projects that we're thinking about in the upcoming year, at the top of my list is we've had two retirements in the past year, so we're still adjusting to those, but successfully so. Those are have been the administrative assistant position in my department and the financial systems administrator. So we've both we've migrated away and made adjustments for those two retirements. And then in the back of my mind and my deputy's mind, Lauren, is the three expected retirements within the next 5 years. So those are critical positions in IT that we're starting to talk about and discuss how we're going to deal with that in the future for succession planning. But we feel pretty good about the approach that we're taking. So we're going to give ourselves lots of time to consider what that means to us and support for IT resources internally. The centralization of IT services, employees, and projects becomes an ongoing issue. In the past two to three years, we've absorbed three positions from other departments in the county into the ITS department. Those included a position in mental health, a position at public health for IT, and the security compliance officer, which was shifted from the mental health department to ITS as well. So in addition to those, we have the Office 365 project that we discussed last week or 2 weeks ago, and which was reviewed and presented between the committees and the budget, GO budget, and then the full legislature. And the electronic healthcare records project is a big one for us that we're working on currently with mental health and public health, and that is the system that will serve both those departments in the future for the management of those records. So we're working very closely with them. I've got a person in my office, an information security officer, who's dedicated completely to seeing that project through. We have the ongoing need to review data classification, protection, and compliance, and hopefully we'll get around to policies that address those particular items in more specifically. and security and policy and development and training. So we've been working with personnel for developing an onboarding training session for new employees that come into the system. So we ensure that they have been adequately trained and understand the IT requirements that are necessary for their positions. Shared services successfully has been implemented in Tompkins County for law enforcement and for records management. We have an ever-going need to continue with those projects, and they grow bigger, and there's more need to support those in the future. They've balanced out, particularly on the law enforcement side for us, but teaser, we will likely continue with our implementation of a shared services effort with the municipal courts as the next step. We intend to and plan to replace the core routers in two of our data centers. We have two data centers, a downtown data center and one at Public Health. The core switches or the key routers in those two facilities need to be replaced or outdated. And we've got that partially budgeted in the voice over IP capital project and part of it coming from next year's budget as well. So we'll start to work on that. And that is a you know, all of our traffic funnels through both those pieces of equipment, so it'll be a big effort for us to schedule and plan for that. Next year, we're also looking at a third off-site disaster recovery and planning. We currently still rely on a system that provides tape backup in some of our locations, and so we're starting to discuss and review options and costs to do an off-site disaster recovery and planning with neighboring counties and their data centers or a service from provider over the internet in the cloud. The last one on the list is centralized address management. So as part of the new computer dispatch system and the direction that they're going in the next phase of address management, the address is key to the next generation E911. Management of information, and we are doing that through the GIS programming program to help them to figure out a way or to help them manage the address information on a day-to-day basis instead of a one-time upload that we've done in the past. So we've got some new servers and systems that are being in place, but they have to be integrated into their daily routines. The full-time equivalents, you'll notice what I've talked about in terms of absorbing positions over the past. One of the transitions we had with one of the previous retirements went from full-time to half-time position, and we've removed that need for that half-time position, and those responsibilities have been absorbed into the same title but a different person who now works for me. And so we've eliminated that half-time position in the department. So we are down a half-time position in from the previous year. One OTR request, and that is a continuing request to fund the ongoing support and maintenance contracts that are required for the future years for the Microsoft Office 365 project. The additional money comes from any savings that we have in our budget currently to support email and email archiving systems that we will no longer have to spend for those efforts. So we'll just shift that resource to this project as an alternative. So the difference is $50,000 to support that project. That's it.
That's it. Questions for Greg? Thank you very much, Greg.
Thank you.
Come on. Why didn't you ask a question?
Why didn't you?
Why didn't you?
I could ask a question.
No, he's leaving. He's gone. He's been dismissed.
Well, there's some acronyms there. TSSERR.
Tompkins Shared Service Electronic Records Repository.
Thanks for asking.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Say that fast three times. We have the Tompkins County Public Library. Susan Curry is here.
and she is ready to go.
I'm ready to go.
Okay.
Thank you very much. We're an agency, not a department, so I especially appreciate the opportunity to talk to the expanded budget committee. So I do want to talk about our budget requests, but because we have a wonderful collaborative, cooperative budget process and that the county trusts the library to do their best with the funding that they're given, before talking about the 2016 budget, I'd like to just spend a few minutes and talk about what you get for the money. I think that's a really important thing. So an opportunity to tell you what we bring to the community and some of the factors affecting our budget. Thank you. There we go. So, you know, I love going to the library every day. You've heard me for 6 years in a row. The library is an anchor institution for our community. The staff are incredible and dedicated. Every year when I come here, it's harder and harder to convey in a limited time all that the library does for the residents of Tompkins County. So I picked a slide just to highlight a few of the things that we do. But please know that for every one of these, there are three or four other things that have a significant impact on the lives of those we serve. These photos include the lower one are the internet stations on a snowy day when we had a delayed opening. It took a couple hours when it was a bad winter, as you know. People streamed in. It was a warm place for them. We have summer reading programs. We have those for adults and for children. And this picture of the little boy is Caden. He's there every single week. He loves the library. And I learned today that he likes to hide and surprise the librarians and the youth services. He hides under the desk and actually springs out. And this is a photo of one of the literacy programs that we have. It's called Sit, Stay, Read, where children who are reluctant readers can practice their reading skills by reading to a specially trained dog. The library serves every age at every stage in meeting the demand for reading and literacy support. And the staff work hard to make the programs, materials, and resources available. They provide assistance with a full range of information needs, health care, tax forms, employment resources, and, of course, one of the most important services we provide is equal and unbiased access to technology, online information, and the Internet. The staff at the reference desk are increasingly focused on digital literacy and technical technology assistance, and we are in the digital age. This will only continue to increase. The library is very heavily used by the community. Even though we were surrounded again this year by construction, the library has the highest attendance of any downtown location. And gone are the days when the library, when the people had to come into the library to use the resources offered. You can see the numbers of online connections that are via our website, the use of digital resources, databases, and collections. We've had double-digit increases in programs offered and attendance for the sixth year in a row. And we make incredible use of volunteer hours. And I highlight both of those because when I started 6 years ago, that was something that I heard from the legislature that I had a lot of questions about, you know, what programs we were bringing to the community and how we were collaborating, and questions about how we were using volunteers. And so we really have worked very hard over the past 6 years in those areas. And as I mentioned earlier, the library is a place for people in need. It's one of our most important missions. In cold weather, we offer a warm place when many buildings are closed. And when there are heat warnings, we offer a cool place. And I honestly, every single day, I walk through the library, and I'm moved and inspired and motivated by the experience of the people who are using the library. The library is a vibrant and visible part of our community, helping both inside the library and through staff outreach to support and celebrate everything that's wonderful about Tompkins County. The list of participation is much too long, but some of this year's highlights so far include the pictures here. We participated in a celebration of Cornell University's 150th. There you see a picture of Ezra Cornell with Ezra Cornell. We had a collaboration with the Office of Human Rights for the 2015 MLK Art and Poetry Competition. We had an annual Poem in Your Pocket Day. April is National Poetry Month. We partnered with Tompkins County Poet Laureate Jack Hopper to distribute more than 1,100 poems throughout the county. And we hosted a poetry event during the Ithaca Festival. And you can see one of our reference librarians at the top there, Teresa Vatican, with Jack Hopper. Additionally, in terms of collaboration, we collaborated with all of the Tompkins County libraries. This was a joint partnership between all of the county libraries and the Family Reading Partnership to provide every baby born in Tompkins County with a free library card at birth. And at the other end of the age spectrum, we're hosting the age-friendly Ithaca and Tompkins County kickoff meeting later this month at the library. And we're collaborating with the County Office of the Aging to ensure we're meeting their new plan for making Ithaca an age-friendly community. So the budget, you can see here our budget. We included, I wanted to include all information about the library's budget as an agency and our FTEs. And this shows the recommended budget from the county administration. One note I'd like to make, it looks like we had this giant influx of revenue that was actually a donation that was to the foundation, but they wrote the check to the library, and the library had to transfer the donation to the foundation. So that's that. It was a one-time bequest that we had to transfer. We have always been. We continue to be grateful to the county for your support. We know that recovering from the recession and all the mandates has been difficult. The library continues to follow closely the recommendations that were outlined in the 2013 County Library Working Group report. And we actually had four over-target requests this year, and these are the over-target requests that were recommended for support. The 2013 report recommended a collaborative approach to reducing the budget deficit of the library. This year, we are requesting funds to help continue with our deficit reduction. And as the library has done for the past 6 years and before, we will also draw down from our fund balance to help with that budget deficit. In 2015, the library drew down $171,328 from our fund balance to balance our budget. The second over-target request is a request for new chairs in the Borg Warner Community Room. You saw that just last year there was an enormous increase in attendance in the Borg Warner Room and programming. I talked about the increases in the programming over the last 6 years. The chairs are the original chairs that were purchased for the new library when it opened in 2000. They've served the library very well, but we hear about them constantly. They're uncomfortable and in need of upgrading. I think you can get a good chair every once in a while that's not too uncomfortable, but I do hear from the majority of people that they're not very comfortable. These are the over-target requests that were not recommended, and I just want to talk about them for a few minutes. The staffing request is of concern, and even with the very generous support of the county, the staffing in the library remains flat, even though the community is demanding more from the library. Over the years since the recession, the library staffing has been reduced from just over 49 FTEs in January 2009 before I started to 41.8 today. But yet we've had those increases in the use of the library. Over the last 2 years, we have made significant organizational changes. We undertook a significant rebalancing of staff in order to have our positions placed as effectively and efficiently as possible. We continue to do our due diligence in reviewing all vacant positions. We do not ever just fill a position because it had someone in it. We look at the changes in technology and library use and work together to determine how we should replace that. The entire staff has formed a very effective team to work efficiently as possible, and we don't replace staff unless necessary. We have had to incorporate into our daily operations the addition of work from the Finger Lakes Library System. As state aid to library systems has decreased, they've lost staff. Our workload increases because the needs of the community do not decrease, but in fact increase. And we had a 25% less in state funds in 2015 than we had the year before. As I noted, technology continues to rapidly evolve. We all know we have our smartphones. It's changing the way information flows and how we communicate. The projects that we have for the future are to create a 21st century lab for the community in the space vacated by Finger Lakes. We are actually behind in our peer libraries in this area, and we do have an opportunity to offer one to the community. We've long needed this lab for classroom instructional use, for collaborations with other organizations, and we this position would be the librarian to manage that service. Having a librarian allows for a knowledgeable, professional perspective from a position that's required to keep abreast of the latest developments and services. There's been a change in how librarians are licensed, and they're now required to have a certain number of continuing education credits every single year. We can't currently meet the need for help with rapidly changing technology. This ranges from very basics, from email setup to smartphone use and portable devices. We're unable to collaborate with some organizations who come to the library. We've done a great job of connecting. They come to us for projects that we're unable to undertake. An example is last year, Ithaca College reached out to us and wanted to have a program for video creation for the youth in the community, but we didn't have that lab, so we really need to have that. So the smart screen would be for the lab, and it would be utilized for instruction. I also think it's important to report to you what the return on investment is in the library, the value we bring to the community. So every year, we calculate the return on investment. This is an example of libraries supporting sustainability. I always say that libraries are one of the original green institutions because we buy something once so that thousands of people can use it. What we do is every year we actually look at what is the cost of what we purchase, books and materials, and we use our annual use statistics to calculate how much the community has saved by using the library. We saved our readers, our community, more than $11 million in reading materials and more than $5 million for movies, music, and audiobooks, over $2 million in technology resources. And small room meeting space is at a premium in our community, so we save our community a lot of money for meeting spaces as well. There are other statistics, but those are the ones that are the highlight. Books and reading are still the library's brand, books, reading, and literacy. But our library contributes to the overall sustainability of our county and our community. And I think this is an important one to highlight because our county is very focused on sustainability and green initiatives. We have a lot of sustainability initiatives. We partnered with Tompkins County Solid Waste to have a recycling station at the library. That's been great. We circulate toolkits. We have canvas bags that we circulate to patrons, and we have umbrellas. And yesterday was the first day those umbrellas actually were heavily used, and it was very nice. The people who checked them out, they're actually barcoded. You can check them out. And this morning there were 10 umbrellas leaning up against the front door, and people had returned them in the night. They didn't want to put them in the book drop wet, which we thought was very nice of them. And this, the photo is of the canvas bag is Asia Bonacci, who's one of our librarians, and this was her brainchild for canvas bags, because people were asking for plastic bags and having the canvas bags to carry their materials to and from the library, very popular. So using your local library is one of the best examples of a green initiative. So for one of the things that we also do is we look at what's the cost of the services we provide. So for every dollar we receive from the county, we provide $5.83 worth of services. So that's nearly $6 worth of services to the community. And we do hear on a regular basis how important the library is for supporting the community. A great example is this summer, the farmers market that's held at DeWitt Park. June was a very rainy month. Every Tuesday, there's a Stories in the Park program that we have. In June, we couldn't do that in the park because it was raining. And as soon as we were able to have the Stories in the Park, almost every vendor told our library staff, "We're so glad you're back, because when you do Stories in the Park, we have twice the number of customers." So I think even more significantly, the library back in 2013 contributed a great deal to community resiliency and development and individual enrichment by spearheading a community conversation on the violence and loitering and drug use downtown. And this has led directly to the outreach worker. I'm happy to say we've had an opportunity to meet with Tammy, and she has been in the library, and we see the results of that work. So in closing, I truly, from the bottom of my heart, want to thank you for all you do for the county and for supporting the library. I think that we have a library we can be very proud of, and we want to continue that excellence for many years. It's ironic, in this age of expanding technology, libraries and the very act of reading and books are more a topic of the news than ever before. I'm always proud when I travel to conferences and workshops to note that our county legislature does all it can to support not only the library, but all of the organizations in the county that make it the best that it can be. So thank you again, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Susan. Peter Stein, Will Burbank. Go ahead, Peter.
I'm just trying to understand what I heard. I'm not sure I heard it right. I think that you said at one point for every dollar that the county gives to the library, you do $5 worth of good or something like that.
Yeah, we leverage that into $5 worth of services.
So where do the other $4 come from?
So it's what you have to do is there's a formula that the New York State Library Association has provided us, and I will send that to you, where you look at the total dollars you receive, divided just your total budget, revenues divided by your total statistics, and you can get that dollar amount. I'll send you the formula.
So it comes from I didn't really want anything fancy. So it comes from New York State, is that right?
We look at all our we use all of the county funding that we get, but we have also done that for the total amount of dollars that we get. So what we do is we take the total budget that you give us, and we use that formula based on our FTE, all the statistics. And it's a formula that you use to divide so that you can get the average amount of services provided.
Yeah, okay. I don't really understand, but I'd like to talk to you later about
okay.
that. Thank you.
Will, go ahead.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for this really good presentation. Once again, I'm just stunned at the range of things that you offer and continue to do on your budget, which I wish was a whole lot larger. You mentioned replacement of chairs in Borg Warner. Presumably, you're also aware of the condition of the chairs adjacent to the magazine area, which...
They were dreadful.
Have they been improved? And I have.
We had to replace those. We've tried to do it one at a time. These were the chairs that were really nice and elegant when the library first opened, but they were soft chairs, upholstered. Over the years, they had become... County facilities has really been terrific. They would take them out and clean them for us, but the fabric became very careworn and used. So we've been replacing them chair by chair as they're in the worst condition.
Okay.
We are replacing them with wooden chairs.
So it's happening. And this is really reflective of the critical function, which is you're essentially the downtown living room for many,
yes,
many, many people.
Very much
people so have a few hours that they need to spend somewhere warm or cold, and you do that. I also would like to, if you could talk a little more about the OTR, but that was not supported for the Librarian 2. Why would that be important?
The Librarian 2?
Yes.
Well, one of the things that happened during the recession is that as we had retirements, particularly in librarians, the ones with the MLS, We weren't able to replace those positions. We're very low on librarians. And specifically, we want to offer this lab. We have a great need for that, and we have had questions from organizations who ask us, does the library have a lab where we could come and have someone teach our, whether it's English as a second language or working with other organizations like Tompkins Learning Partners, how to set up email, how to create a website, it's full range of technology from the very basic to sophisticated. And we don't have a space, a classroom setting where we could do that. We also know that the teens in our community, and particularly in Ithaca City school districts, all received Chromebooks this year. And having an opportunity to work with teachers for a classroom setting for teens specifically would be really important. And so we need a librarian who could do that. A librarian would be the professional librarian would be required to have certifications in technology-related areas for teaching. Did that answer your question?
Well, yeah, and if we are not able to fund it, this doesn't happen, or?
Well, what's happening right now is we have one-on-one digital technology sessions at the reference desk. People can sign up for that, and we do the best that we can. The lab isn't built yet. We are hoping to build that in the next couple of years. So we'll have to figure it out. The one thing I will also add is that we did have to go to 60 hours this year, and we stretched the staff schedules out so that, you know, for example, sometimes the reference desk aren't staffed because we don't have enough people. So, and the technology librarian, yes, would be in charge of the lab, but all of the librarians they do triple duty because they staff the desk, they help people with technology, they put on programs, literacy and reading programs, and they are the selectors for the collection that's in the library.
Thank you.
Martha. And then Mike.
Thank you, Jim. A couple things that would be helpful, Susan. If you could, I guess, send it to Joe and he'll get it to all of us. A roster that goes back a few years, and doesn't have to be back to 2000, but, I mean, a few years that shows how many people in this position, you know, in these different positions. So so we can see the trends,
okay.
Maybe 5 years.
We have that, and we will send that.
Okay.
So it's sort of like a graph that shows staffing and the trend over the years.
If you can break it down by position.
By librarian and classified staff?
Yeah.
Okay.
If that's not too hard, yeah. And I can a table would be fine. Okay. And state funds, you mentioned.
Yep.
State funding. So mm-hmm. I'd be interested in what the trajectory's been on that.
Well, I can tell you that in it was a 25, well, almost a 26% change in 2015 from 2014. There is a state formula that, you know, our state funds don't come directly from the state. They go to the Finger Lakes Library System, and then the funds are sent because there's a central library for that. It was the state funds in 2014 were $155,699. In 2015, it was $115,699. So it was a 25.69% drop. And we never know what that state piece is going to be. So we haven't heard yet what it will be for 2016.
Okay, thanks. This is going to sound random, but somebody asked me recently about building additional stories on top of the library. And this person was thinking about retail and housing and office and a different, you know, not more library space. I seem to remember the building is structurally sufficient for one more story. Is that right? No?
No, it's the first thing I asked when I started because, you know, you look at what the trends are and what's happening downtown and the opportunities. You know, you realize having a one-story building downtown doesn't offer the opportunities the county might want. The building is not designed to hold another story of any sort.
Joe?
Yeah, we did talk to a developer a few years ago. I can't remember how many, 2 or 3 years ago. who had a vision of creating a structure kind of around, like a skeleton, around the library and carrying the weight of what's above it on that. So it wouldn't have to build on top of existing columns. It would actually create a whole new structure mm-hmm. around it.
So
and
I remember that.
It's a pretty interesting idea. It kind of drifted away, but who knows? Something like yeah. that could happen. And, you know, it's not unprecedented in New York, for example, to receive air rights for development that occurs above a building. So,
it'd be exciting. Okay, interesting. And you mentioned that Ithaca City School District kids got
Chromebooks
that your staff are helping them with after
that
school?
We have an influx of school children every afternoon after school. I mean, school's just started, so we'll see how it turns out this year. But traditionally, after school, we have a large influx of students who come in for homework help.
So I understand the town's funding has gone down, and the city doesn't provide you any funding.
The city...
$15,000 or something.
Yeah, the city provides... the city has remained pretty flat. It's through the sales tax. It's just over $14,000. The town of Ithaca had notified us last year. They had traditionally given us $20,000 a year. Each year we had to make that request. And we were notified last year that it would be $10,000 this year, and then $10,000 next year, and after that, nothing. But this year they were more generous. They gave us $15,000.
Wow. Great, guys. Can I? What about the
and
school
still
district?
Still less generous?
Yes, but it was better than I thought it was going to be.
I understand, but what about the school district?
Mm-hmm.
Have you gone to the school district?
We do not receive any funds from the school district.
That's too bad. Okay, one other thing. Then September 25th, Friday and 26th, is the readathon.
Yes.
And overnight, 24-hour readathon. And I get to read kids' books at 3 o'clock on Friday for a half hour. And if anybody wants to support the library and, like, make me look good, you could put a couple bucks on, you know, go to the readathon, and I'm there. And anyway, so it'll be fun.
Thank you for participating. The readathon, by the way, is to celebrate your freedom to read anything that you choose. It's in celebration of National Banned Books / Freedom to Read Week. So
I have Mike Lane and then Mike Ziegler. Go ahead, Mike.
Susan, I'm not asking for the actual statistics, but does the library track its users and participants at programs by municipality?
We do not. We keep the numbers. We do keep track of the statistics, the number of people attending. We don't have a, because they come into the community room, we don't track programming by municipality. It's a great, I hadn't even thought of, maybe I can try to figure out a way to get that. We do know municipality.
It would be very interesting to have those.
Yeah,
figures.
It would.
Mike Sigler.
I just wanted to point out to Martha's point that not only is it just on the New York City, I mean, I'm pretty sure that's what Rev is doing right now, is they built a superstructure over the building that could carry the weight of those extra floors. And certainly I think it's something we should investigate with the library. And then maybe if that does happen, that the money raised from that would go directly to the library as a parent, instead of to our general fund or whatever. I mean, we could go up really high there. I mean, the hotel right across the street is pretty tall. So,
I think there would be a really exciting opportunity for that. The library would be interested in participating and helping with that.
Susan, I have a question. I know that the county and the city have come together with a social worker, and mm-hmm. you know, we were concerned and continue to be concerned about security.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, have you felt any effect from that yet?
Yes, it's been very good. I will say that in 2014, the library took a we had a meeting of all the staff, and we took a zero tolerance toward any illegal activity, and it was early in 2014. There were 5 arrests for drugs, and but the word got out that the library wasn't a good place for that, and that dramatically decreased. Well, one thing I will say is that we do see groups, large groups of young people, who do come into the library and they want to sit and talk, and they hang out because they're waiting for their buses. But there's been no illegal activity. I just last week went to talk, sat down and talked with a group of these young people, just asked them if they had their library cards. I always offer to read to them, which generally makes them want to leave, but then I try to talk them into graphic novels because those are great for reluctant readers. But they mainly, one of the things I think is really important is that they see the library as a safe place. And I think it's really important. One of the best things we did was hire a teen services librarian who has developed programs for teens and to engage them. And have that's one of the things we want to have is a space for these young people to where it's okay for them to hang out because they would have access to resources and materials. And you know, a recent example is a couple of Saturdays ago, she had a special conference just for young adults and teens. She had over 135 teenagers attend that. Do you know how hard it is to get 135 teenagers in a library? And they loved it. It was a special conference for them. It was great.
Thank you. Martha, last question.
Yeah, thanks. Do you track where your cardholders live?
Yes, we know exactly. I mean, yeah. Libraries are bound by a New York State confidentiality law. I mean, but we do know the demographics, and you know, we can provide that, and we can tell you numbers. For example, the town of Ithaca, when they did give us our funding, they asked for a report, and they wanted to know how many people were from the town of Ithaca, how many people were from the city of Ithaca, and so forth. So we do know that.
Okay, I mean that, and not the zip code. The zip code is confusing.
We do have some zip codes in the record.
Right, but that crosses municipal boundaries. So
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then if somebody were to build over the building, does the occupant of the lower floor stay there while all that's going on?
Well, it would be a complicated building project, but there are, you know, they, you know, as Mike said, they've done that in New York City. And after that meeting a couple of years ago, I'm a librarian. I did some research. I mean, there are ways that you can go about that. You could do some really cool things. You can make the entire outside look like the original Ezra Cornell building, which would be a really cool thing. The one thing is the library does have solar panels, and we, you know, have a website for patrons to track the savings. So, you know, I think probably that might be taken into account.
Yeah. Good enough. Thank you so much, Susan.
Thank you very much. And I just wanted to thank two members from the Board of Trustees, have our President, Bruce Ryan, and our Treasurer, Cindy Nicholson. I wanted to thank them for coming tonight.
Okay.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
You're very welcome. Animal Control, Jim Bedrew, is here, and he is approaching the microphone.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hi, everyone. And just advance with this? Or? Oh, sure. Our program is pretty straightforward. It really addresses two issues for us at the SPCA. One is animal population control, which we do a very good job with setting policy to basically spay and neuter any of our own animals that leave. We do not let any animals leave that are not altered. And we also have a public clinic which deals with owned pets with people who might not be able to afford the full service prices at local veterinarians to get the work done. You can see by the numbers that consistently year after year, and this is just cats because that's what we're talking about here today, but we consistently increase the number of animals coming through those clinics every year. Specifically, what this money helps us to do is basically twofold. One, deal with the animal population of feral and free roaming cats in our county, and also administer rabies vaccines to those animals. So those are animals that basically have no other area as they are unowned, but might be a nuisance to property owners or local residents who want to help with that issue, but don't necessarily want to fund it personally. So I think my slides were very short, but that is the gist of the program. It's pretty straightforward.
Any question for Jim?
But last year we were able to, through this funding, spay and neuter 527 cats specifically and administer basic vaccines and rabies vaccinations to that quantity of cats locally here in Tompkins County.
Mike Ziegler, Martha.
How many of those are feral?
Out of those numbers, 527 in 2014 were feral. So the number I'm using and the dollars we associate with this program are strictly for the free roaming. So it would be 527 free roaming cats.
Martha.
So the larger numbers are?
The total number of cats we serviced through members of the public and the free roaming cats. So they might have been a combination thereof. But that's the total number of cats we serviced, not including adopted animals, our own owned animals. But these are animals that people either brought us as free roaming or members of the public who brought us for financial assistance to help spay and neuter.
For spay and neuter. But does that include rabies, too?
It does, yes.
Okay. And I have to tell you, we've had years where we've fought over this program. So it's nice to not have that kind of controversy. I assume there won't be this kind of controversy.
Any other questions? No questions. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you all. I'm off to Kevin Sutherland's going away party.
Yeah, so
thank
you. Well, we'll be there. We'll be there soon. Ladies and gentlemen, our next meeting is September 17th at 5:30, and that would be assessment. Thank you all for coming here. Anybody interested, go to Kevin's party. It's at North Star, right? He will be leaving town soon. Anyone else? Got anything for anything? We're done. Thank you.